returned this afternoon, where I think he do. The realization that out of the household of the Most High God and across the nations of Christendom, there moves this day a certain area of impact in the thinking of the people of God. It is a realization that one of the strongest centers of the structure of God's kingdom starts with the home, and that the home is, of course, a very vital unit in the structure of any society. But the program of God's kingdom finds this a valuable unit from which society in its multiples grow. Not only do we find the multitude of homes that form the community and the city, the county, the state, and the nation, find still that the fundamental factor where spiritual power and where vision and impact must start for the movement of any force in the nation, it must be in the home. There's nothing more crucial to the continuation of the homes of our race and of our nation than the effectiveness of the mothers in these homes to use their influence and to guide and to lead their children and to raise them in the nurture of God. But as the admonition throughout all the background of the Scripture have called upon the fathers to take firm stands against the powers of darkness, to lead with the same patriarchal history that has been a part of our race, it has been left up to mothers to leave their guiding influence throughout all generations and their impact as it relates to carrying forward the truth, the teachings and traditions and the culture as they mold the young minds even before their contact with the facets of the world where they move into adulthood and where they have the great impact of their preceding culture and then manifested. There is no doubt that it has been historic among your race to recognize traditionally the responsibility that children owe to their fathers and mothers because it is historic and the laws of God have called upon you to remember your fathers and your mothers. We have been told as a race to not forget our fathers and not forget our mothers, and in more than this, if there's any great spiritual truth that needs to be remembered today, it is that the preservation of a culture requires respect for our forebears and a determination that our posterity shall carry on an expanding culture built on the foundations that they have passed on to us. No society will rise higher in its vision than the spiritual and moral guidance that the motherhood of that nation can provide. Thus it is that we point out that historically, then, this day has a very vital part because from the very beginning that the Christian church throughout these United States have largely throughout now the Christian world set aside a day to honor mothers in their loyal service inside the great Christian community where they render a very vital part to God's kingdom. And we never have had an example any greater than that which was manifested unto us by Christ himself when in even the final hours of his life, when he was hanging upon the cross, and when the very agonies of all the weight of what he had assumed upon himself in the garden, the transgressions of a race bore down upon him and upon his physical and human concept. And at the same moment, while hanging there on the cross, he looks down at his grieving mother. Probably no greater impact had ever been visited upon any mother in history than now was being visited on Mary as she looked up at her son. She had been visited in the hours that preceded his birth by an angel. She had been told by a very archangel out of the very presence of the heavens that she was to have a child of the power of the conception of the Spirit, and that this was to be very God, who would not only assume an identity with his people, save his people from their transgressions, assume his throne in the earth, and sit upon the throne of his father David. And as Mary looked up at Jesus, these looked like the fulfillment of prophecy far removed from the promises of the angel. For while he could be in the process of saving his people from their sins, and this she would ponder, the throne seemed so far away. As she looked up at that son who had given all and more than had ever been visited to man in all time and history, and who had given an impact upon the very structure of the earth he lived in, that was to never change beyond the declaration that this is the fullness of God and that he was the Lamb without spot and blemish. Nothing could change it, nothing could stop it, but she looked up and saw death creeping now upon this son. Jesus looked down at Mary, and he said, "Mother, behold thy son." He turned to John, his beloved disciple, and passed on the responsibility of looking after his mother and provided in this moment for this assistance and care to his mother in the very last moments of his life. And he said to John, "Son, behold thy mother." Assume this responsibility. For he, as a disciple, had followed Christ, now would have an opportunity to serve in giving what assistance he could to Mary, who had become the mother of God by this miracle of Christ's birth. In the instance of these situations, we note that throughout the entirety of the structure of Old and New Testament, that there was preserved this hallowed spot in the thinking of children, directed by their faith and by their worship, to honor their mothers. No one would question the fact that the impact of the mother upon the child in its formative periods is one of the most vital things in our nation. And this is one of the reasons why, if ever there was a time, we should raise all standards of our race and all the patrons of our race to preserve and to hold holy and clear this very vital force and impact it's now. No wonder, then, that every facet that we have today in the forces of the darkness that wage war against the kingdom, seek to disrupt the home, seek to destroy its standards, and seek to separate the children from any influence that the culture of our forebears might pass through the mothers to their children in their guiding years. And so it is that we with all Christendom do recognize today and do honor mothers, mothers that have gone on, mothers that have given us a great historic background in carrying out with that wave of emotion that we call love, that special care, that nothing can be added to except the grace of God. So it is that we think about these things and realize that we are a people that are different from any other people on the face of the earth. This is not something that originates in Africa. It didn't originate in India. In fact, in Asia and China today, girl babies are unwanted and not considered to be an asset to their society. You look out over the facets of the earth and discover what it is and among what people is that we find motherhood and women placed as upon a pedestal of devotion by the men of the race, and you'll discover that this is something peculiar to the Nordic people, the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, and Lombard households. You'll note that throughout the structure of our society, that from the days of the origin of our race unto this time, that God has preserved these facets of responsibility. Someone said we shouldn't get emotional. Let me tell you something. There is certain facets about your makeup. You are spirit, soul, and body. And out of the facets of your consciousness, as you are aware of the things that are real and the things that have impact upon it, such waves that bring out of you in your thinking, in your meditation, the manifestations of the effect of love is referred to as emotion. And you show me a person without emotion, and I'll show you a person that hasn't any perception. Or even the embodiment of God could look upon the sorrows that had accompanied the passing of his friend Lazarus, knowing he had the power to call him out of the grave, and it said Jesus was moved by this. And the shortest verse in the Bible is that Jesus wept. I'm going to tell you that of all people, when you have a Father God who embodied in earth can feel and be touched with emotion enough to weep over your grief, then, my friends, you have nothing to fear, for a God of such grace and of such magnitude and of such love is capable of bringing his kingdom to full fruition and will accomplish this. Not a God that is a stone, but a God, my friends, that became flesh and blood and dwelt among you, whose spirit carried the highest concepts of human value into the focus of attention by the demonstration that there was even emotion with God. Now, there are areas today that some people can call emotional irresponsibility, but responsible emotion, born of realization and vision and knowledge, is one of the most vital assets in the soul of race. As we think today upon these words, you are the light of the world, I think that this again should bring us to a greater realization of our understanding of our importance in the world in the eyes of God. If you turn to the book of John, you will find that concerning himself, Jesus made a statement in the 9th chapter of John, and we read it in the 5th verse, "As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And John probably unveiled more in his declaration concerning this word light, as it was used, than did almost any other of the apostles. In fact, we know that he opens the book of John with declarations concerning the nature of the man Christ Jesus. It says that not only were all things made by him, but without him was not anything made. That in him was life, and life was the light of men. A light that could shine in darkness. The darkness didn't comprehend it, but they couldn't stop it nor stay it. This was the true light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. It's very important for you to know certain areas of biblical, historical, scientific fact. One of them is that the household of the Most High God, which are spirit of his spirit and life of his life, came into the world. That in the creation of the mighty cosmos, that the Eternal who created it, created people and established races that were born in the earth in the hour of his creation, establishes them for the continuity of the societies and the peoples of earth. And he made them here, and they never lived anywhere else, never existed anywhere else. The Tungus man, the Asiatic people, never dwelt on any other planets anywhere in history. They started here. Their life consciousness started here. Even the spirit of their race had its beginning here, as God put it into motion and ordained it to continue to multiply and increase. There are peoples today that didn't stay where they originally were placed in the universe. This is true of Lucifer's kingdom. This is true of the Negroids. This is true of some of the peoples that have dwelt in earth. They came from other places in the universe on the active participation of following Lucifer in his rebellion against God. But there are no peoples of the earth quite like unto the household of the Most High God, seed of his seed, spirit of his spirit, light of his life, and he says flesh of his flesh and bone of his bone. These people he refers to as his own household, and they have that one facet of final synthesis that marks the distinguishing quality between they and any other people on the face of the earth. They have existed in him, are a part of the essence of his own light spirit, and therefore they, as he is, are synthesized in their conscious and spiritual nature as one with him. Thus, by this declaration, the last and final work of God in the areas of creation was to place in earth the children of his spirit, now embodied in physical form, to bring about and to consummate his great purposes in destiny and in the building of his kingdom. God, who is light, can only be approached by the children of light at the level in which the communion of the Father and his family take place. So it is that he said he is the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Now this word man is like our word human. This means spirit man. This means man who are his offspring in his household. And he being the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And therefore he was in the world, but the world did not know him. It was made by him. They knew him not because they lacked the areas of perception to realize all that was evolved and involved in his being here. Now let me point this out to you. That in the book of John, therefore, where Jesus said, I am the light of the world, and John makes this declaration from the beginning concerning the fact that this was the light by which all things were made. There is a very high law of understanding in advanced areas of physics today in which they realize that the whole universe being comprised out of waves of energy that start at its highest essence in a light field beyond even the ability of the eye to perceive, beyond optic capacities to recall. There are waves of light which reach out into areas of affinity, and that we today have a celestial plane surrounding our world which is a light plane. The light dimensions and light vibratory patterns move from beyond the video plane into video frequency where they can be beheld, and move beyond that into unknown layers of light vibration beyond. Even as we are aware today of the electronic universe, which emerges out of the mind waves of God, which are also in a wave of light, which is beyond the understanding of those that are not of your race and not of your faith. This is one of the reasons why it says that God is light. But it says he's also before all things, and by him all things consist. It is in the knowledge of the areas of physics that they have polarized as well as given sex unto the measures of life. They have started in the areas of infinity on one side up to the video frequency of infrared as the symbol of the male waves of light. And they go to the other extreme, and they have cited that the ultraviolet is the female wave of light in the waves of light compression in the synthesis of energies and in the giving of birth to matter. Now, since this is a function in which the total light contains the fullness of the process of creation or of extending not only the image that guides its impulses, but it is known by the physicists today that no waves of light, either in their compression or in their expansion or in their rolling waves, do not move without an area of directivity, and that there is a wave of light which in its utter brilliance, in its utter clarity of emanation still existent, possesses a intelligence quality that directs these waves with their high patterns of speed to their areas of directivity throughout all the universe. Now, there are physicists that have comprehended this. Some, like Russell and others, were able to put these things in words, and other physicists came along and were unable to interpret the words in image. But this was understandable because their seed was not clear. It is also a factor that to be able to catch the image of energy that is directed out to the very life soul of God, out of the very mind of God, the thinking processes of God, is reserved unto the children of God, and that, my friends, unpolluted. And so we tell you that God is not only light, but he is not light as a principle, as a force and a wave, still and motionless, without personality. He is by image and by form, by essence and by personality, the absolute sheer perfection of the whole pattern of wave energy of light purity. In fact, so much so that it is a light that animates substance. It's a light that out of its sheer waves, as it directs and translates it even into the lower waves of energy that we call electronics, it places its solidity into the physical creation, and has so geared the measure of its universe that it leaves its planes, each according to the purpose of the mind that had first purposed it. I point out to you that there are people today that can live in carbon bodies made up of the many particles of our atom. Their soul consciousness, because God has so ordained that they possess one, can become aware of their existence and aware that they are. There is a vast difference between the great waves of God's mind, out of which has emerged all of the substances of the universe and its primary pattern of carbon, but carbon doesn't know it exists. And it isn't in the purpose of God that carbon should be aware of its existence, even though down in each tiny particle of it, in each individual motion form of it, as its electrons move around its nucleus, there still exists an element of the mind of God. He holds us together. He exists throughout his universe. His universe exists in him, but is not aware of his existence, except where he has animated it with soul consciousness, with brain-mind waves, and then carried beyond that the highest order of perception, which is the spirit-mind waves of the household of his own. Now we point out to you that whereas this has been in science diagrammed, whereas this is understood in the most advanced areas of physics, and even has been reduced to patterns of form in symbolisms of mathematics which are related to it, the pattern still remains that God is, and that God possesses personality and identity. He possesses the areas of emotion and the great impact of purpose. And in all of these things, he has not had to learn how to do this. He didn't start doing this. He was a summation of consummate wisdom and knowledge that emerges out of the sheer light of perfection and of the eternal nature of its existence. Universes can continue to spin through space, and island universes can be hung in the balance of the Master Creator, and in the processes of it can go through transitions and change according to his knowledge and according to the very timing by which the very elements themselves can exist. But in the constant change, and the constant process, it's ever being formed and ever being made according to the mind of the Father. And thus that which he synthesizes becomes almost as permanent as that which synthesized it is permanent in his being. Somebody talks about the beginning. The only beginnings you talk about is the beginning of a certain cycle of history, event, or formation. God forms and creates a solar system, or he forms a planet like this one in his mind's purpose, and this is the beginning of a pattern of history. And there may be constant beginnings, as even our Bible starting talks about in the beginning God. And then we have a lot of beginnings in here from catastrophes and events that changed the very face of the earth, and God didn't destroy it, he made it again. I point out to you, it's important to know that there is a relationship between you this afternoon and this tremendous wave of sheer existence intelligence that is shaped and molded and formed according to the image by which he intended to demonstrate his form. For God in form was the first formed of all existent creatures. In fact, you as a people were the first begotten children of the Father, and you were begotten by him before the foundation of all this cosmic order, a spiritual seed, a light offspring of the great compressing light essence that existed in God himself. And thus you are molded out of a consummation of the light waves and light formation of the very essence of God's being, with his determined desire to project an offspring, to produce a family, to expand it in the universe. Angels rebelled. archangels could not share the possibility of a life greater than theirs, like unto the Father himself. And out of the mind of Lucifer came hostility and the darkness. Let us for a moment consider, therefore, what is contained in these passages when God, who is the light, who said he is the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world, is identifying the children of his household as having possessed light like his, being spirit of his spirit, and therefore they have entered into the world. We have today a great wave of theological ignorance that does not know that they entered into the world. They think they started down here as a sort of a biological complex, and that's all. They don't realize that the spirit that entered into that body was with the Father before the world was framed, was spirit of his spirit, and therefore light of his life. When God talks about building his kingdom in the earth, he talks about transferring from heaven to earth his own household, that he might produce a household of light which will be above the earth and will have visions and knowledge and understanding while occupying the earth above any other people. The whole conflict of trying to change and upset the thinking processes of your race was to try to move against it and mutate it from the beginning so it would be receptive to the darkness and out of its area of error lose its great power of existence. Well, the processes of God are clearly marked. If, therefore, God said, I am the light of the world, and I am the essence from whence it starts, and as the Apostle Paul in his revelation was to understand, again, all things were made by him. He was before all things. By him all things consist. No question the book of Colossians concerning what the Apostle Paul learned in the heavens concerning the absoluteness of the embodiment of God that we know as the man Christ Jesus, who was the eternal God, the mighty Father Spirit, before all creations that are visible to your eyes. By this declaration, then, he said, I am the light. Now, I am the light that is the light of the world. Any illumination, any wisdom, any truth has to have its origin in me. All error, all darkness, all superstition, all fallacy has its origination in the mind that was retrograde, seeking to capture the world by error, is Luciferian. So you have two sources. It's either of God or it's of Lucifer. And therefore, even creations that the mind of Lucifer is entrapped, only the light and knowledge of God can set free. And they can't set themselves free. It must be done by the Spirit. So either the Father must do it, or he must use children of Spirit to convey it. That's the reason why you as children of Spirit are children of his light. And there is moving through you the same pulsing waves of energy and light to sustain the very spirit of your nature. And it is by this process and by this capacity that you can think thoughts that are his thoughts, that you can be so animated by the creative forces of the Father and the programs of God, that that light aura that surrounds you becomes a field of contact as it creates its added energy by the contact of others, and as every impact of every event, every idea, every newspaper, every transmission of thought moves through you, it's filtered through this light, it is adjusted in your consciousness by it, and you do not have to have someone tell you, well, this is right and this is wrong. You know it automatically. Why? This is because the more you advance into your cultural heritage, the more you as children of light occupy the earth, the more the waves of it become more clear in the function of your thinking, the more everything must conform to the light or it must be rejected as darkness. Now, let then this be pointed out to you. In the book of Matthew, Jesus turns to those that constituted his followers, those that were his disciples, those that were his household, and said, ye are the salt of the earth. If the salt hath lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of man. God wants to make clear that the impact of your race carries with it the very special impact of spiritual knowledge, wisdom, and vision. And as such, therefore, is the great savoring influence. It is the great savoring force that builds the kingdom, establishes knowledge, wisdom, understanding, righteousness. But at the same time is identified specifically with you as a people, as a race. Therefore, in the earth, in its solid form, in the earth as substance electronic or in the pattern of the multiple carbons, you are classified by God as the salt, the savoring influence. But you must preserve your identity as such. You must not be fused, multiplied, mixed, or expanded by being fused with any similar substance that has the same appearance or even different appearance, but was not the same. You know, back in the days when Salt was not as easy a commodity to acquire as it is when you go today to the great supermarket and take it down in a dozen different forms and a dozen different manufacturers who each one given you a purified product and added to it everything from iodine to all of their professed claims for what they've added to salt. But the most important thing is that it's salty, and that's why you bought it. Now, the fact remains that that back in the days when the caravans crossed the Sahara, it was called the Salt Sea. The reason was the most important commodity which they traded for was the salt they carried from the great drying beds, not only around the Dead Sea and other places where they evaporated the water and gathered the salt and then traveled with these caravans across the desert with salt. And they traded it in Africa, and they traded it in Asia for jewels and for values that was unequal because of the necessity of man to get salt and the inability to find it except where there were deposits where they might gather it up in far parts of the earth. Salt was not that easy to obtain. But the Jews had a skillful design on how to get twice as much for their money. They take tasteless phosphates, and they would take other materials like white bentonite, which is nothing but volcanic ash or earth, and they'd mix it with the salt, and they'd have twice as much of this white stuff, and it would be salty, but it wouldn't be as salty as the salt. And then, somewhat satisfied with cutting it 50%, it cut it down, and you just barely could taste the salt. But they still were weighing it out, and what the salt had lost its savor. So therefore, you are the salt of the earth, its most vital, life-changing commodity. But if ye become mixed with the earth, like the rascals were mixing it in order to get more money out of the commodity, why, you're not worth very much, because the salt mixed with earth loses its savor, is worthless, to be only thrown out, to be trodden down. I want to tell you this also, and this for Mr. Johnson and all the integrationists, mongrelizationists of our time. You integrate, mongrelize your race, and the byproduct will never be the light of the world. It'll never give any leadership. It'll decay. It'll be destroyed. It'll have lost its savor, its spiritual quality, and it'll go down. Your first, most important responsibility before God is to preserve the vessel you live in and live in honor within it in the structure of God's kingdom. There is nothing as important today than the knowledge of this area of responsibility. I'm going to cite to you that the enemy has created a semantics all his own. How he likes to cry out racist, but what, my friends, can have a higher spiritual origin than the transplanting of a spiritual household in the earth and putting them in bodies of flesh and said, these are my people, this is my seed, this is my race, now preserve it. I don't know any heritage that I'd rather have than to know I'm a child of the Father, irrespective of how the enemy might be able to gather up the masses of world goods, irrespective of how much in the gathering the forces of darkness he's able to get up what people call wealth. I would rather be without a penny. I would rather be moving as a wanderer in the earth and preserve and know that I'm not only the household of God, but so is my posterity, than to possess this wealth at the sacrifice of losing this racial purity. Then let me tell you this afternoon, that there is no possibility that the light of the world will not, with its wisdom and its knowledge and its source and its wave, accomplish and gather and attain all things. Anytime you see something swept away because you're in the midst of a battle against the enemy, instead of holding a great feeling of grief over what you've lost, just catch the vision of going out and reconquering it and expanding. Because I'm going to tell you, the devil has tried to tie down the kingdom by fear of goods that it possesses being swept away. And the kingdom wasn't built with goods, it was built with light and with spirit. And I'm going to tell you that all the goods in the world were synthesized out of the light to begin with. And the children of God's kingdom shall occupy the earth, and it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And all that it contains, and my Father's rich in houses and lands, he holds the wealth of the world in his hands. Do you think, my friends, that he's going to keep it back from his own children? If they held up the standard, if they obeyed his law, they would be the most prosperous people on the face of the earth. Here in these United States, I think we have watched the blessing of God demonstrate that a people that love God, that seek to live under the patterns of his law, they assume their areas of moral and ethical responsibility and are spiritually guided, can produce and can receive more of the benefits of their production than has ever been known in all society of mankind. But also they can become so busy at this that they lose the great waves of the most important things they must remember in order to keep the continuity of this area of blessing. As we have risen to great heights, we can be dropped to great depths as far as our standard of society and civilization are concerned if we permit our minds to be clouded, our vision to be lost, and our light to be put out, and our salt to be mixed with earth. But there are areas of this where you are a blessed people because God will not permit this, and you are so close to the great borderline of the end of the age and the tremendous events that are taking place that God is going to preserve your society in spite of the people that are asleep. He's going to shake them real good. That's why the earth's getting shaken as hard as it is. So is it, why so many earthquakes here? Well, it makes take a lot of shaking to wake some of these people up. They've been apathetic so long. You know, after they lose a few houses and they see their barns go down, and after the water spreads out and washes away their valleys, they got to build it all over again. And after they have watched judgments that don't take a great loss of life, and sorry, the millions we have, but they move upon a people, they start to remember God. I'm going to tell you that sometimes these things are brought upon us, for he who the Lord loves, he chastens, and sometimes the chastisements begin in the house of God. But oh, the end of these things, when they hit the enemies of God's kingdom and the catastrophes that are brought forth there. Now, therefore, God said, I am the light of the world. Now, in the book of Matthew, he's just told you about not permitting your society, your race, and your faith to be fused. He now says, ye are the light of the world. You're not only the salt of the earth. This is its physical embodiment, the great savoring force, not to be mixed, not to be mingled, but to retain this identity. Now ye are also the light of the world. Now we move from physical elements now to spiritual quality. The wavelength of the emanations that hold together an electronic universe and synthesize the highest wave of conscious perception of existence that exists in the world. Some silly person says Dr. Swift's a materialist has gone into existentialism. Now let me tell you something. There is nothing more important for you to understand this afternoon than that you exist. There's nothing more important for you to know is where you came from and who you are and what you were a part of. And this, my friends, is not materialism. This is the highest essence of spiritual perception that the human mind is capable of comprehending. And I cite unto you today that many people who talk about things spiritual have released ivory. Out in the sea as they gather together, for they shall come to thee, thy sons shall come from afar, thy daughters at thy side. The scriptures tell about all of these things, and the nations and the kingdom that will not serve my household will not continue to exist in the earth. They shall be utterly wasted. For this is the glory of the eternal one, and this is the thing that God hath promised when he prepared for thee thy sanctuaries, where he planted the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box tree forever. When he made these United States, he had you in mind in a part of your nourishment and your being raised in his household. You know no other place in the world where all the things are here, the myrtlewood tree and the cedars of Lebanon, all the things that God has here in Palestine a little, here in great accompanying masses. And God, speaking forward, talks about you. And there's much to be said about this subject, but the most important thing is that the light of God is in you, that you are the Elohim, you are the children of Yahweh. We go back to the psalmist for one moment. We think of these words where the cry of the psalmist is, O God, the heathen are come unto thy inheritance, even to thy holy temple. They have defiled, they have laid Jerusalem in heaps. Now we know that we migrate as a society. We are a new Jerusalem. And the whosoever our race exists, we are the city of peace, the household of God. And we know that the heathen come in and try to lay it in heaps. Not by, my friends, their abilities are superior to yours, but by their cunning. Because the cunning of the children of the world order is sometimes more evil, and in its cunning it moves where the children of light do not perceive it. Because the children of darkness are more cunning than the children of light. Now don't make the mistake of evaluating knowledge, wisdom, and intelligence when you say cunning. Cunning, my friend, is the craft of deception. Now, therefore, it is hard sometimes for your race to think of other people as they are. You want to think of people by the way you know people, by the way you feel, as you have emotion, you have responsibility, and you want to treat people and think with people and work with people on this process. This is why you can't put together a program of world peace built on your concepts and your ideas, expecting them to make the contribution. They don't have it, and they won't do it, and they'll operate with the cunning of the darkness, and they'll seek to destroy you. And there's only one way triumphantly that the kingdom comes in, and that's when it comes in with might and with great power, and with a rod of law and righteousness. It rules the earth, and they shall conform, because you have the power to see they do it. Now, therefore, they have shed the blood of my people. They've shed the blood of Jerusalem. Now, what shall transpire? The call is, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, and thou that leadest Joseph like a flock. This is your race. This is the household of the Most High. This is the Nordic peoples. Now, listen to what it says. Even before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh, stir up thy strength. Now, this is the house of God to the westward. Ephraim, Manasseh, Benjamin, stir up thy strength. This is a part of thy destiny right here. Turn again unto us, O God, cause thy face to shine, let thy light descend upon us so that we can be saved. Saved from what? From eternal destruction? Saved from error, from violations of divine law, from lack of comprehension, from a lack of sequences, and a lack of coordination between you and your Father. Listen to what it says then. It says, therefore, O Yahweh of hosts, how long wilt thou be angry against the prayer of thy people? Thou feedest them with the bread of tears. Now, therefore, thou makest us a strife with our neighbors, and our enemies laugh at us. Why? Because we turn from the declaration of the wisdom and the knowledge of our God, and let the blackness and the darkness overwhelm us. So turn and shine upon us, you that lead Israel in the house of Joseph, like a shepherd. No wonder, therefore, that we have the great declaration, turn unto us again, O Yahweh God, so that thy face can shine upon us, for we shall be saved. God who stands in the congregation of the mighty and judgeth among the Elohim, or the gods, as it's translated in your scripture. And he said, ye are gods, and all of you are the children of the Most High. Spirit of his spirit, life of his light, light of his life. Do not let that light be darkened by fear, superstition, pressures. Do not let the declarations and the cries of the power of darkness that wish to devour your land put out your awareness of that light, because that light can shed into every corner of your thinking. It can empower you with wisdom and vision. It synchronizes you with the mind of God and is going to be manifest in the earth as the greatest power the world has ever known. You say, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. It is this spirit which is this light of perception, wisdom, knowledge, and understanding that is the conquesting force of all the hindrance, all the opposition of the satanic kingdom. So we can say, yes, Jesus is the light of the world, but we are his offspring. He, the eternal Yahweh, hath said, I have begotten thee, and ye are the light of the world. Now, what do you do with it? You don't go light a candle and then go get a bushel basket and cover it up. Why would a man cover up a light with a bushel basket? Because he didn't want to be embarrassed by somebody criticizing the light or sharing with the light. He wanted to cover up the fact the light was there, so he put the basket on. You've got a light, you can't turn it out. If you try to cover it up, you're going to be, of all people, most miserable. And if you let that light shine, you can't build a city and put it on a hill and then, my friends, not be prepared to defend it, because the enemy knows where it is. You may have it back in a canyon somewhere, they don't know where it is, and you might not have to defend it till they find it. But if you've got a city up on a hill, you better be prepared to defend it all the time. And the scriptures say that he didn't put you down here to hide, he put you down here for victory. And ye are the light of the world, then proclaim it and let it shine. Let it disperse the darkness, though the darkness rise from the impact of the light. Let it shed its light to every corner, let its truth be known, and therefore let the laws of God be declared, whether it disagrees with president or with cabinet, whether it disagrees with the heathen that have come in, whether it disagrees with pseudo-intellectualism or not. For this is the light, and this is the truth, and this is the secret, and this is the power. And therefore, let it shine. Because I'm going to tell you this. There is no power, no power out of the darkness that can destroy the light. You're not living before the resurrection, you're living after it. And you're living with the assurity that the power of it dwells in you, and it is in the secret of your consciousness. Some say we don't want a mental religion, but we better have one that demonstrates that there is a great spiritual intelligence and a triumph in the areas of the mind, because there's too much around us today that show mental decay because of a lack of wisdom and vision, and people don't want to think hard enough to even conquer the era. I think there is no area of evil from disobedience or from lack of action that compares with mental laziness, because of the apathy with which they have so deadened the mind of man that they don't want to exert themselves to think. You know, when people become too lazy to think and let the enemy do their thinking for them, they are captive. And it is only the light of truth that can set them free. And there is no doubt that we have a battle in this area of inertia. And there are those that would defend it as though it were spiritual. But I'm going to tell you that God challenges you to think. And he says, come now, let us reason together. God and man says, come now, let us reason together. He doesn't say that to the pagans. They couldn't reason anyhow. He doesn't say that to the darkness. He can only talk to the light when he said, come now, let us reason together. Because ye are light of my light, and ye are spirit of my spirit.